It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Glad to be with you here. In fact, a very special show we have here about the Combine for the NFL this week. In fact, we thought there was going to be an ECU person. It's not. But we'll talk to a guy that is a former ECU Pirate, Chad Greer. His son, Will Greer, is actually going to be in the Combine, and we'll see how he does. Looks like his draft stock is going way up. Maybe the looks like first round, so we'll see how he does. And then we have a very special guest, Daniel Parlagreco, who is actually a draft expert. So we have those guests coming up. But I'm going to pitch you down to Bubba to give you a little news and talk more about the draft and former ECU players who were invited back in the draft back in the day.
Yeah, Dave, with the NFL Combine starting today, Tuesday, February 26th, and running through next Monday, March the 4th, we wanted to catch up with someone who's no stranger to Pirate Nation. Most fans have probably heard him down through the years on Pirate Radio. He's appeared on Morgan Ayler's show numerous times. And his son, Will, is, of course, a standout quarterback out of West Virginia and transferred there from Florida. And the last 2 years just lit it up for the Mountaineers, throwing for nearly 7,400 yards and more than 70 touchdowns, and is one of the top five quarterbacks on most draft boards in this year's draft. So with, like I said, with the Combine starting and with the NFL draft just around the corner, we thought it would be a good time to catch up with Chad Greer, and let's go to that interview right now.
Well, we're obviously, anytime we can talk football, we're very excited. Our next guest, Bubba, I'm very excited. We've been wanting to have him on for the last few months, but it's now is the perfect time to have him.
Yeah, he's a guy who's a Pirate. You've heard him on Pirate Radio down through the years, and Pirate Nation has. His son, Will's one of the top prospects in the upcoming NFL draft, and with the Combine just around the corner, we wanted to have him on. Welcome to the show, Chad Greer.
Hey, man.
Hey, Chad, welcome.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all having me.
We wanted to obviously talk about Will, but first we want to talk about you. How did things work out? We've asked a lot of players over our time, almost a year now we've been in existence. How did you get recruited to come to East Carolina?
Oh, man. I actually transferred from University of Richmond, and I was going to go to Chapel Hill and play for Mack Brown. That was a done deal, and I got to Chapel Hill, and Mack wasn't ready for me, so I started scrambling and was going back to people to recruit me out of high school, and Art Baker, I reached out to Art, and he had me come down, and I met Kevin Gilbride, and I think just, man, I said, I want to play for that guy. You know, run and shoot was a, you know, the thing, and man, he was one of the founding fathers of it, and as much as I love Travis Hunter to this day, you know, just Travis wasn't going to be a run and shoot guy, so it just seemed like a great opportunity, and I fell in love with all things East Carolina and, you know, never looked back.
Well, we're obviously glad that you did come to East Carolina and a lot of great memories. Are there certain things as far as teammates, are there stories you could tell on the podcast, maybe PG-13 related? That,
I was going to say there's lots and lots of stories. I mean, I can tell them on the podcast. You know, the great thing about that place is so many of those guys that I had the just great fortune to play with are still great friends and were such great guys. I mean, and I think so many of them stay close. And I mean, I just probably, I don't know, there's a ton of those guys I stay in regular contact with, see all the time. I've been friends with for, I don't know, 30 years. That's crazy. Long time. And just the, even guys that, you know, you don't see on a regular basis, but you will see them on Facebook or that they'll show up somewhere and you connect with them. It's like, you know, you just saw them yesterday. It just is a really special connection among the East Carolina guys.
I got to do an interview. Hold on. What was it like being part of that 91 team?
Well, I wasn't part of that 91 team.
Oh, you weren't part of the 91 team. My apologies.
No, yeah. I graduated the spring of 91, so I missed the my last.
What was it like watching that 91 team?
Yeah, exactly. So we used to joke. We said, you know, we didn't turn the corner when I was there. We got the blinker on, and the next year they turned the corner. We had a big wave, finishing number 9 in the country and beating State College there. That was pretty fun. And I'd actually gotten a job with Carolina Telephone, largely through the help of Mr. Lane Peterson, who was
it just by coincidence endowed my life that I wrote him a note. You know, this is way before the time of email, obviously, but I wrote him a letter and asked him if he could help me find a job. But, you know, long story short, I ended up in the phone company. But the guy I worked for had no interest in letting me off a day of work to go down to the Peach Bowl, so I didn't get to see it. I watched it on TV. But
oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it was my brother played at NC State and had some buddies on that team, and a lot of fun to this day to still talk about how you know, Luke Fisher got across, and our guys held on a wing. You know, Ken Burnett's one of my very best friends, and he was a great linebacker on that team next to Robert Jones. You know, broke his arm that game, still has a great scar from it. Just, you know, so many great memories of those guys, you know, that I played with and got to watch play that 91 year. It was so fun to watch.
Well, Chad, obviously you were in the same room as Jeff Blake, and that's what Jeff really came onto the scene in 1990. That's what I know in 89, and there were times where he filled in for Travis Hunter, and when I think maybe up at Pitt he came in a time there when Travis maybe had an injury. But Jeff Blake really exploded onto the scene in 1990, and then obviously took it to a completely another level in 91. Talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, so thanks to Jeff, I've set a record at East Carolina that still stands. Most consecutive quarters wearing a baseball hat. And it's not one I really wanted to own. But that was, you know, Jeff and I were suite mates. We roomed on the road. Travis and I were actually very close. And, you know, I think the thought was a redshirt Jeff in 89. I actually put him in for a trick play. It was just a weird, bizarre thing in a game. It didn't matter, so it kind of burned his year. And, you know, he ended up got a lot of great experience that year and in the following to get ready for the big 91 season. But, you know, Jeff was, you know, clearly a very talented guy and represented, you know, Pirate Nation very well, not only at East Carolina, but certainly in the NFL and beyond.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was that, was it 95 season in Cincinnati where he – exploded onto the NFL scene. Was it Carl Pickens and Darnay Scott? I mean,
yeah.
You'd always hear him hooking up with and throwing a lot of deep balls. And I tell you, Jeff Blake's deep ball, the way he threw it was such arc and at a trajectory where it was so catchable. And you see so many guys throw that ball flat, but he threw a pretty deep ball.
You know, we used to stay after practice. We actually got on the team, Sam Beverly, that probably threw it 80 yards. I mean, maybe the strongest arm I'd ever seen. I think he came at these kinds of quarterback, ended up, you know, great athlete. I think I see some stuff on him with Facebook. Like, he might be a power lifter now, but he could, you know, flat throw it, but he didn't play quarterback. But Jeff and I would stay and work on deep balls all the time. There's really more of a competition if you could throw it farther. And one of the things we talk about was throwing it like a punt. If you get a turnover, and you know, would it carry farther? And we literally practiced that. And I remember that when he was having that success in Cincinnati, Sports Illustrated did an article on it showing the arc of the ball and the success he had throwing to like you said, Darnay Scott and Carl Pickens. That was that, you know, he went to the Pro Bowl. It was really cool to see that. But really proud of Jeff and all he got to accomplish, and fun to see a Pirate have that kind of success on Sundays.
Were you guys coached to throw the deep ball with that arc on it?
You know what? Honestly, it's something I said that we just did. I used to do it in high school. I went to a small school, and I would try to throw it to the pylons, try to hit them like a punt, and try to drop them on the pylons.
I
started kind of doing that after practice to see if you could throw it further. So I think it really is just more of a something we were doing as a competition thing, just to see if we could, who could throw it, you know, further.
Yeah, the reason I ask is I remember Garrard doing that some, too.
That's one of those things that kind of, I mean, and Chad knows this, I mean, just depends on the coverage. I mean, when the coverage allows you to throw the deep ball where you have one-on-one or you have somebody over top the coverage like that, or I mean, behind the coverage, then yeah, you drop it in like that. It's, you allow your receiver a chance to adjust.
Remember that, Gallery Furniture Bowl where Garrard was doing that to Keith Stokes there in the first half against Texas Tech.
And you're bringing up some great names and great memories of Pirate football. That's really cool. I don't know David, just obviously, you know, pulled for him and Stokes both. That was those were great guys to watch too.
All Dave, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I want to ask you, Chad, as far as we're looking now at the quarterback with I want to move to talking about Will with the time we have. What is it like now with obviously you were a great quarterback. Now you have your son being a great quarterback going into the draft, and I'm hearing some great things, these mock drafts. You don't know what to think, and I was joking about that with a draft expert we had yesterday recording an interview, but you don't really know until, I guess, that night. But what are your thoughts going in now? Well, first, I guess we need to ask about the combine. How's he doing, and what are your thoughts being the father of a great quarterback?
Well, I'm really proud of Will. I mean, he's worked really hard for this opportunity, and we talked today. I told him, you know, just don't get so caught up in it that you don't take time to appreciate it. You know, we talk a lot about when the picture he has of the two of us when he was probably 11 years old in a little Pop Warner bowl game, and just keep reminding him. I said, you know, if somebody told that kid that, you know, he'd be drafted in the seventh round by, you know, Buffalo, you know, how happy would that kid be? Or you told that kid, then you got a chance to be a 300 kid pick and play, to go to the combine. How incredible would that be? So, and you're playing with house money. I mean, everything is just an incredible blessing and opportunity for him. And he just is such a grinder. I mean, I think sometimes he just doesn't take his eyes off his focus and what he's doing in preparation. And, you know, he doesn't realize that he's appreciated and try to enjoy it a little bit. But I think he's going to go do well up there. He's trained really hard. He's been out in California with John Beck and then with Stars on the combine prep piece. They said he ran a – I think they had him to 4.58 or something like that in the 40.
Wow.
And people don't, I think a lot of people don't understand how good of an athlete Will is, but I think on laser, you know, he says that, you know, like he may run a, if he gets into 4.7 even, I think that's going to be probably open to people's eyes, but I think he's got a shot to run. Certainly in that level, he jumps well. He'll do well in the shuttle. So I think the athletic side is going to do well for him. I think he'll throw it well, and I think the biggest thing he's going to do is interview well. His football IQ is really strong, and he's very mature for his age. And for, you know, he's experienced a lot in a short time in terms of his life experiences. And I think he's going to make somebody a great quarterback. And I think that'll just be what's going to be, no matter where he gets picked or where he goes.
Do you know where he's projected right now by Kuiper or anybody, or do you pay attention to that?
I don't pay any attention to that because I don't think they really know. I think I think they all try to sell, you know, subscriptions and get people to watch the, you know, their stuff. But I think the reality of it is if somebody's really interested, they're not going to tell you because they're trying to buy as cheap as they can buy. You know, they're not going to they don't want to show their hand. And at the same time, you know, there might be people out there that don't want him that may say they do just to try to, you know, bait somebody out of the woods to take him. So I think it's one of the deals where he's just going to go compete. He loves to do that. He'll compete at the combine. And, I know he's already got some interviews lined up, which is a very positive sign. He usually don't even schedule those till after the combine. So, you know, there's enough teams looking for a quarterback that I think, you know, he'll, you know, it only takes one, you know, one to fall in love. So find somebody to fall in love with him, it'll all work out.
Well, I know selfishly, I know that the Redskins desperately need quarterbacks. So I'm a big Redskins fan, so hopefully they'll give him a look. I'm hoping for that.
He said he had a real good interview with those guys down at the Senior Bowl, and you know, it's really a lot of similarity to the Cowboys and the Giants as well. I think he felt really good about his time with those guys in Mobile. So, you know, that's the thing, you just don't know. I mean, there's
– right.
There's 8 or 10 teams that are going to take one, and you know whether there's a run on them early or you know just it's going to be a big put, you know, run on D lineman first, and you don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that can affect when the quarterbacks will be taken. But you know, I told him, I said, whether it's a lot to be said to be taken in the second round. You're one year closer to a second deal. The situation might be a little different where, you know, somebody, you know, you might be hopefully could be behind somebody, you know, in a perfect world, he's behind a Brady or a Breeze or Rivers or somebody like that that he could learn from and, you know, not be pressured to play right away. But I think if he needed to play, you know, if somebody took him in the top 10, needed to play next year, I don't think there's anybody more ready than Will to go play on Sundays. So, you know, I don't think it really matters to him. You know, whatever it is, and he'll be excited to tackle the challenge.
How did he enjoy being a Mountaineer and playing in the Big 12 with such a quarterback strong league?
I mean, that was a fun league to be a part of and watch ball games in, man. It was, you know, just such a great, you know, cool experience to be in the SEC and around those teams. But then the Big 12 is just, if you like offense, and I certainly do, I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch. I was talking to Brett Venables yesterday at the clinic down here, and, you know, he's a Big 12 guy. And I think people just don't understand the stress that's put on defenses in that league. This notion there's no defense in the Big 12 is such a misnomer. You know, you look at what the Big 12 teams did to the SEC teams or to Ohio State. You know, TCU in their first an opener against Ohio State this year, I think it was the most yards Ohio State given up in, I don't know, a really long time, you know, from a middle-of-the-pack Big 12 team. It's just you have to defend the entire field, you know, width and length, every play of the game at a very fast pace for the majority of Big 12 games, and that's tough to do.
How surprised, of course, it doesn't affect Will. He's graduated from West Virginia, but how surprised was he that Dana left to go to Houston? I know, you know, to leave the Big 12 to go to an American Conference school, I was shocked when that happened.
Yeah, I'm not shocked. I mean, understand, too, we're big fans of Dana. He was great to Will and our family, and really the whole West Virginia community was. Just that was a really very East Carolina-like place, to be honest with you. A lot of similarities in the fan base and the culture and the community up there. But, you know, I think the easiest, you know, way to look at it is that there are about 20 million reasons, Dana, to take his job in Houston. But he's got strong family ties there. You know, if you kind of look at it big picture, he'd been in West Virginia 8 years. So he was going to have to – there's going to be a decision coming up. You know, they always kind of say 10 years is kind of that magic number when it's – you usually got to look to move on or, you know, you're really going to be there forever kind of thing. And just it was getting, I think, for him, the chance to get near some family, you know, the 20 million reasons and a five-year stability deal with his son, you know, could you know, pretty well knows that his son can finish college there where he's at, and they're so close. I think it was a pretty easy decision for him. I think it was hard, maybe, you know, on a personal level, but I think professionally and as a dad, I think it was a pretty easy decision.
All right.
Chad, kind of working in reverse and say earlier you talked about how Will's experienced so much and overcome a lot in his few years and just, for instance, what happened down at Florida and then obviously his character showed through, I mean, moving on to West Virginia and all the numbers that he put up there over the last couple years. So just talk about that and how that transformed Will.
I think Will is the first to tell you that, you know, he is, he has no regrets. I mean, at the time it was tough with the transition from Florida. But it was the experiences that he's had has molded and shaped him into the man he is right now. And I don't think he feels like he'd be the same person had he not gone through it. So while it was tough and it made for some dark times there for a minute, he's really came out of the other side. Strong, mature, focused, you know, in a way that very few, you know, people his age are. And, you know, he very happily married to a beautiful, wonderful girl and have a daughter, my granddaughter, who was just, I mean, I'm pretty sure she's the one that invented slice and bread and hung the moon and everything else. But she's something special, and he's a great daddy to her. And so it just, you know, it's unfortunate the way it happened, and he certainly enjoyed his time in Florida, but it was an important part of making him who he is.
Well, you know, one thing I can say, Chad, is that in Florida and West Virginia, he's a winner. And when you were talking about he's ready to play on Sundays, there's something about someone that has had experience winning at the college level. I know the game is different. It's a lot faster, obviously, in the pro level, but he knows how to win, and I think that'll transform to the next level, the NFL, I really do. I'm not just saying that because you're on the podcast. I really mean that.
I appreciate it. I don't disagree with you. I mean, I try to be careful what I say because, you know, he is my son. I don't want to look like the proverbial homer, but obviously I am. I am biased. But, you know, I'm a guy that's seen every game he's ever played, and he hadn't lost many games at any level, in any sport. I mean, the kid's just one of those guys that, you know, they don't come around all the time, but, you know, when you and probably didn't realize it until, you know, a little bit later. But, you know, at some point you start going, man, it seems like everything he does, he's pretty dang good at, and the teams always win. And, you know, the guys around him tend to do better when he's playing with them. I mean, it's just can't really put your finger on it. But, you know, if whatever, however you define the it factor, I think he's got it. And the kids seem to respond, teammates seem to respond to him, and they find ways to win games.
How about the fact that he had success in two completely different offensive systems in college? Do you think that's appealing to NFL scouts?
I would think so. I mean, you have four different coordinators. I mean, last year was the first time since high school he played with the same coordinator for 2 years, and
you
could see what happened with his production. I mean, just, you know, got that much better even. So I think it shows that he's versatile as an athlete. It's certainly not going to be an issue for him to play under center. He's very comfortable in the gun. You know, he ran pro style concepts in high school and certainly at Florida, and got, you know, certainly a heavy dose of air raid kind of concepts. Although, you know, the different teams in a spread look, or, you know, a complete air raid system, which West Virginia really wasn't. You know, it's a little, there's different nuances of that. And Will did more line of scrimmage with Spav and Dana at West Virginia than he ever thought about doing at Florida. I mean, he called every protection. He called, you know, so he's identifying fronts and coverages and movement keys, and you know, he's moving guys around, changing plays. I mean, that was not an insignificant thing. I think that will translate very well to the Sundays. I think it's more just going to be the nomenclature, you know, it's just a different terminology, but that's the same going from any one system to another. Like I said, he did that four times in college. So I think the transition for him is going to be pretty seamless.
No.
Now, Chad, you talked about having coached Will at Davidson Day, of course. In addition to Will, you coached a tremendous quarterback who's now at Wake Forest, a guy named Sam Hartman. Talk a little bit about him. You coached him at Davidson Day as well as Oceanside Collegiate Academy, correct?
That's right. Sam is just a tremendous competitor, really talented kid that I think was fueled by everybody doubting him. You know, everybody told him he was too small or too slow or too this, that, or the other. And then, you know, he dealt with a lot of adversity. He lost his brother died 3 days actually before our state championship game his sophomore year. The next year, you know, and by the way, he played in that game and played the best game of his career to that point and won the state championship that Friday night. The next year, he has this very rare thyroid issue that they had to slit his throat open and pull out about a baseball-sized abscess. He lost 40 pounds. And, I mean, this is 3 weeks before the season's going to start. And I'm looking at him thinking, he's not going to play at all this year. He didn't miss a play. He did not. It took him a while to get to full speed. And honestly, I probably didn't. I'd forget sometimes he's such a competitor, but you know what he accomplished that year was just unbelievable. And then he finally got fully healthy for his senior year, and you can see all the hard work he put in as an athlete. I just saw him last weekend. We had a baby shower of all things, and he came home to see it and would be there. And I mean, he weighs 200 pounds. He's every bit for student and change, and can make all the throws. He's smart. He's got a lot of the same competitive and work ethic characteristics that Will has. I think Sam's going to have a tremendous career in college, and I would put money that he's going to play on Sundays too. I think he's that good.
I wanted to ask you, Chad, about obviously you follow East Carolina football and being a graduate of East Carolina. Wanted to ask you what your thoughts on Coach Mike Houston and we've had a rough few years. It's been really hard. What do you think about Coach Houston coming in? Do you see them transforming, and hopefully we'll be back in a bowl this year?
Yeah, I mean, look, I know Coach Houston well enough to speak to him, but I don't know him well. I sent kids to play for him at James Madison, but you know, it's obvious he's a winner. I mean, he won it with Noah Ryan. He won it at the Citadel. Won big at James Madison. I think he's going to win big at East Carolina. I love his staff. I mean, Coach Trott, Coach Kirkpatrick, Coach Shank coming back, Coach Steele coming back. I mean, you know, I think the thing that I like Scotty Montgomery. I mean, just to be honest with you, I think Scotty's a tremendous knowledge guy, as a coach. I think he cared, but he just didn't have those same ties. And, you know, we went from Ruff, who was so ingrained in East Carolina and was such a, you know, I mean, I think we all loved him. And, you know, the Scotty didn't have those same ties, it felt like. And now, you know, Mike's coming in with, you know, reestablishing a lot of those ties to the, you know, tradition of, you know, what kind of got us there with some of those same coaches. And I just think, I think we're on the right path. And even Holton, I mean, you know, Holton was a ball boy. But, you know, a lot of those coaches were there. Those guys have known him forever and know Morgan. And, you know, just there's that sense of family and community, I think, is important at a place like Houston. I think that, you know, Coach Houston is going to capture that. And I have, you know, very high hopes that, you know, he's going to get us back on track. We need to be here very quickly.
Yeah, especially when you look at the proud tradition, you know, that going all the way back to the 80s. As I've been following the team since 86 when I moved down east, and been a Pirate fan ever since. It only takes you one game to go to Dowdy Ficklin or Ficklin at that time. That's how old I am. It wasn't Dowdy Ficklin.
Look, I was there when the Ward building was brand new, and it was something special.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. I was right after that, a couple of years after it was built. It's amazing how things are growing with the program. You look at a new coach, a new athletic director. We have the Southside Project coming. You look basically with Coach Stu and his staff, what they're doing in basketball, and all the spring sports now. I mean, Kyle and Bubba and I mean, we're just blown away. The spring sports, every single spring sport right now has a winning record. It's unbelievable what's going on.
Yeah, I think the sense of pride just continues to grow with the facilities, continue to just get better and better, and the success of all teams. I mean, you know, football, I think, has always kind of been the crown jewel. I mean, it's a centerpiece, but it is a lot of places because of the amount of people that, you know, will rally around it. And I think football is just a different experience. But, you know,
yeah,
East Carolina people are sure proud of the baseball team. And, you know, even what Coach Dooley's doing with basketball, getting that turned around and going the right direction. And it's fun to see. I mean, that spirit of the East thing is real. And if you don't get down there to experience it, you don't really understand it.
Yeah, season ticket sales for football in week one, we're up 1,069% over last year.
80 tickets sold in the first day or first week, and it's been over
right
1,000 now.
Yep.
Yeah.
And awesome. Week one. So.
That's exciting. Well, I think that's a big thing, too. I mean, you know, I remember being at NC State a couple of years ago, and those coaches were talking about the environment in Greenville, that it's the closest thing to an SEC environment when, you know, we're doing right, and, you know, the Eastern North Carolina is in the seats where, you know, like they like to be, and do such a great job of being there supporting the team.
Wait a minute, Coach. Did I hear you right? did you say NC State coaches were saying it was like an SEC environment?
Yeah.
Now that wasn't on Double D Dave Doran, was it?
No, it was before Dave.
I didn't think it was Dave.
Just before Dave. But the point is, you know, college football coaches, it's a very cyclical thing, and those guys all, you know, they might be enemies one year and on the same staff the next. But, you know, it's well established that, you know, Greenville's a great place to play and a great environment. The best thing that happened to people that are pulling against East Carolina was when we had empty seats. I think it's a really important part of the program and our success is to keep that place full and loud. And when it's rocking, man, it's a great environment. It's one of the best around.
I remember that Carolina game in 2014 when we put 70 on there.
Won 70.
No, they were saying we won 100. You know, so in the third quarter, towards the end of the third quarter, they started chanting, we won 100. And I was like, wow, we could actually score 100 if we wanted to that day. And people were – I know they're Carolina fans were saying, you guys ran up the score. I was like, no, we didn't. I was like, we scored 70. We were running plays right up the middle in the fourth quarter. And even Kirk Benkirk got a – he even scored a touchdown to make it 70. And it was like – I mean, it was – we were not trying to score, and we still scored the 70th point.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Coach.
No, those are the games you – You know, my brothers, neither one could get into college. They both ended up going to state, and one of them played there. And I still love to remind them of Scott Harley and things he did to those guys and some of the great wins we had against them. It's fun to remember games like that.
And hopefully there'll be more to come this year.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Chad. A lot of people would understandably think that Will was probably your most notorious son and most in the public eye, but that's really probably not the case, right? Because you have Nash that has nearly 7 million followers, and I guess about 6 years ago really hit it big with his Vine videos.
Yeah, I mean, it's Will by far is the third most popular child in my family. Nash and Hayden both run circles around him in that regard. I don't think he's ever cared. That might change depending on what happens on Sundays for Will, but he's still got a long way to go to catch up to those guys. But the funny thing is, I mentioned to you that baby shower, Will's going to have a baby brother. It looks like, turns out my wife Nyla is pregnant, and we're pretty sure I'm the dad. So believe it or not, I've got a two-year-old granddaughter that's going to be 2 years older than her uncle.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
How old are you, Dutch?
How old am I?
Yeah. You're a man. I can ask you that.
Old enough to know better. I'm 51.
50? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same reaction Coach Muschamp had when I told him yesterday. He's like, wow, really? So we're still getting used to that. But it's,
the cannon is not shooting blank, sir.
As the talk show host G. Gordon Liddy used to say, he's virile, vigorous, and potent. So
I think it's more like, you know, I'm not as good as I once was, but once I was good as I ever was.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, you got it going on.
Yeah, one time.
You were talking about Will having the it factor. I think you have the it factor. So
yeah. Well, congratulations on that. Congratulations.
Yeah,
on that.
Congratulations. Yeah. Well, can I ask you a question? Can we go ahead and start recruiting him now to come to East Carolina?
Yeah. If somebody offers me, I'll take that pressure off. I'm gonna be an old man trying to make college. So I hope somebody will pick him up.
Social Security.
I think Tim Walter. I think it was Tim or Ken, bought him off. He's already got a full wardrobe of East Carolina stuff ready to roll. So he's in good hands, good shape for purple and gold right now already.
All right.
That's awesome. Well, can we, I tell you, it's going to be awesome. And by the way, I want to invite you. I don't know your schedule, but we're inviting every former player. If you can spread the word for us, if you can't come, a lot of your teammates, April 13th is a spring game. Coach Houston has made it very clear how important the former players are, and we wanted to invite you to the spring game in Greenville on April 13th for the Pirates.
Man, I would absolutely love to be there. My dude baby's April 10th, so it may be.
That's a good reason.
I will tell you this: my wife is the ultimate football wife, and she. In fact, I was supposed to work a camp that day. And I was sure she's going to say, "We can't work at camp that day." And but the, you know, the baby, she's like, "Man, you need to go ahead and do that. Go ahead and work at camp."
So, oh man,
I don't know, may surprise you, but I'd say it's unlikely I'll be able to make it out that week. But I'll I plan on getting
spread the word, soon. Coach. Spread the word to former players,
and plan to get down there soon for sure.
Well, we enjoyed having you so much, and in fact, we've been talking about you being on our bucket list, one of the players we really wanted to have on, and we wish you the best and congratulations. We'll have to get out our cigars right there before the spring game. And definitely good luck to Will. We're following him very closely. And please give our best to him as well. And we're going to be pulling hard for him wherever he's playing and know he'll do well in the NFL.
Man, I really appreciate you guys. Thanks for the kind words and support. And thanks for what you're doing for East Carolina sports and certainly East Carolina football. Appreciate you guys.
All right, absolutely.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Have a good night.
Taking a look at this 2019 NFL Combine, there were 338 invites sent out, and the state of North Carolina was very well represented. Some of the notable names from around the state that received invites were Duke quarterback Daniel Jones and NC State's quarterback Ryan Finley. Finley's invite was one of six for Wolfpack players, which made NC State the most well represented at this year's NFL Combine in terms of schools from the state of North Carolina. East Carolina wide receiver Trayvon Brown, however, was not among those to receive an invitation this year's Combine, and that is pretty surprising. Taking a look at some of ECU's numbers at the NFL Combine down through the years, probably the first thing that immediately comes to mind is back in 2008 when Chris Johnson ran that 4.24. That, of course, was the fastest time ever run at the NFL Combine up until 2017 when John Ross broke it by 0.02 of a second when he ran a 4.22, besting Chris Johnson's 4.24. CJ's other numbers at the Combine in 2008, he had a 35-inch vertical jump, and he had a broad jump, get this, folks, of nearly 11 feet. That's right, a broad jump of 10 feet, 10 inches for Chris Johnson, who was taken 24th overall that year by the Tennessee Titans. Way back in 1992 at the NFL Combine, Robert Jones, All-American linebacker for the Pirates, was a first-round draft pick in the 24th slot, that season. He ran a 4.83 40. He had a 38.5-inch vertical jump and had 28 reps on bench press, which was 225 pounds, and had a broad jump of more than 10.5 feet. His son, Zay Jones, of course, was selected 37th overall by the Buffalo Bills in the 2017 NFL Draft. Of course, going early in the second round. And Zay that year, of course, he was coming off a season in 2016 in which he set the FBS record for receptions. He had a tremendous showing down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. And that year at the Combine, he measured at 6'2", 201 pounds, and he ran a 4.45 40, which was very eye-opening for some that questioned his speed. And then he had a 36.5-inch vertical jump and a broad jump of more than 11 feet. So just tremendous numbers by Zay Jones, and it showed with where he was selected by Buffalo. Some other ECU combine results down through the years, in addition to those of Chris Johnson, Robert Jones, and Zay Jones. Going chronologically, let's go back to 1992. You had ECU Hall of Fame quarterback Jeff Blake, who of course led the Pirates to the 11-1 season and number 9 national ranking. Jeff was measured at just a little under 6 feet tall at the Combine. He was 4.86 in the 40 and had a vertical jump of 30.5 inches. In 1996, and Jairus McPhail, who went on to play for the Miami Dolphins, Jairus ran a 4.49 40, had a 38.5-inch vertical jump, and had a broad jump of more than 10 feet. In 1997, Lamont Burns, who was such a tremendous offensive lineman, blocking for Scott Harley in 1996, Lamont Burns was 6'3.5", 299 pounds, performed 30 reps on 225 on bench, and had a 40-yard dash time, get this, folks, of 4.78. That's right, an offensive tackle running 4.78, just remarkable. In 1999, you had Big Rod Coleman, who was such a tremendous defensive end for the Pirates and went on to an excellent career in the NFL for multiple teams. Rod, he was 6'2", 262, ran a 4.94 40, and had a broad jump of 9 feet. In 2002, you had David Garrard and Lyttard Henry. David was just shy of 6'2". He was 235 pounds and ran a 4.83 40. Meanwhile, Lyttard Henry measured just shy of 6'1", was 206, had a 4.61 40. He was able to do 225 on bench press 26 times and had a 35-inch vertical jump. In 2004, you had T. Cop, who, of course, you hear so often now on Pirate Radio. Terrence Copper, he was just shy of 6'2", 208 pounds, ran a 4.51 in the 40, and had a 35.5-inch vertical jump. That same year, you had offensive lineman Brian Rempf, who went on to a solid career and played for the Baltimore Ravens. Brian Rempf was 6'5.5", 319 pounds, and had 31 reps. That's right, 31 reps on 225 pounds on the bench press. In 2006, Guy Wimper, he was just shy of 6'5". He was a little over 300 pounds, ran a 4.96. That's right, over 300 pounds and running a sub 5:40, and he had 26 reps on 225 pounds on the bench. In 2007, you had Andre Allison. Andre ran a 4:42:40, had a 37-inch vertical jump, and broad jump more than 10.5 feet. In 2010, you had such a tremendous defensive line class. You had Linville Joseph, who went in the late second round, if I'm not mistaken. Linville was 6'4.5", 328 pounds, ran a 5:08:40, and had 39 reps on 225 on the bench press. Jay Ross, just like Linville Joseph, as well as C.J. Wilson, that's what they both performed, 30-plus reps on 225 on the bench press and ran 5:01 or less in the 40. And C.J. Wilson, in fact, folks, he is a former high school running back, and a lot of Pirate fans probably remember the block PAT that he returned for 2 points against Southern Miss. C.J. ran a 4:83 40-yard dash. In 2011, you had Dwayne Harris. He ran a 4:53 40 and had a 34-inch vertical jump. 2015, you had Justin Hardy, who, of course, is still playing for the Atlanta Falcons. Justin was 5'10", 192, ran a 4:56 40 and had a 36.5-inch vertical jump. And then last but certainly not least, in 2018, you had Davon Grayson, who recently signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. Davon, of course, had an excellent career for the Pirates despite battling multiple injuries. Davon had 135 receptions for nearly 1,800 yards with the Pirates and 13 touchdowns. But Davon was measured at 6'1", 199 pounds, ran a 4:51 in the 40, and had a broad jump of nearly 10.5 feet and a 34.5-inch vertical jump. So there are some numbers from down through the years over the last 25 to 30 years that East Carolina Pirates have put up in the NFL Combine. Now we're going to catch up with a guy that knows an awful lot about this year's draft class. He is Daniel Parlagreco, and give him a follow on Twitter. He has nearly 11,500 followers, puts out some excellent information on the 2019 draft class. And on Twitter, he is at DTP Draft Scout. Again, that's at DTP Draft Scout, and his website is also dtpdraftscout.com. Again, dtpdraftscout.com. Let's go to that interview right now with Daniel Parlagreco.
Anytime you can talk about football of any level, you certainly get excited. I know we do here on the Sports Objective, and Bubba, we got a very special guest. Glad to have him on today.
Yeah, in the next couple months, you, of course, have the NFL Draft coming up, and then the Combine is going to be this coming week. And, of course, that runs for about a week, and now we're very excited to catch up with a guy who covers the draft, has done so for 4 years now, Daniel Parlagreco. Daniel, welcome into the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to be here. I'm excited for the draft just like you guys.
Well, I guess we actually cover East Carolina University Pirate stuff, and there's actually one player I want to ask you out of the gate to see if he has any kind of shot. At least, like we were saying, maybe a free agent, unsigned free agent, number 88 on the team. He just graduated. Trayvon Brown, a really good wide receiver. He's probably our best hope to get anybody in the draft this year. Have you heard anything about him, of any teams, any mock drafts or anything so far?
I have not heard anything about him. You know, okay. The problem with the skill positions is, they're 60, 70 deep. So a lot of it is, when it comes to these guys, is flavor, what the individual coaches like about a player. You know, the wide receivers coach, for NFL teams usually go to the pro days and they'll work out these guys. And a lot of times it's who they feel connection with, who they feel chemistry with. And if he has a really good pro day and he works out and he impresses some of these wide receivers coaches in the NFL, they might push for him to get drafted as kind of a late round guy or, at least a priority free agent after the draft's over.
And that's what the three of us were talking about. He's got the build. He has the potential there, and we're not experts like you, or we're not involved in the NFL game at all, but he's the one guy on the team, I think, that could be a late rounder or certainly, like we're talking about, unsigned free agent. Are there any, going into the draft, I know with the combine now, are there any Certainly, I think the one thing that comes to mind is one player, Kyler Murray. What do you think about him? Do you think he has a shot to do very well? How is his draft stock now?
Yeah, I think Kyler's a really kind of an intriguing guy. I think what's going to be interesting about him is I think you're going to have two schools of thought. You're going to have a lot of you have these coaching staffs and you have these front offices and scouting departments that are old school, and they look at very specific metrics when it comes to players like quarterbacks. And, you know, for instance, you take organizations like the Giants, organizations like the Packers, and these organizations are going to look at, and they're not even going to look at a guy that's under 6'2". So chances are those teams, unless they completely revamp the way they look at players and evaluate players, they're old school. So they're not even going to look at a guy like that. But some of these younger younger staffs, younger coaches that are willing to give a chance to or willing to take a risk on a player, I think, you know, you should, because Kyler's not, I mean, even though he's only a one-year starter, I think just to kind of label him an athletic quarterback would really do him a disservice, because you turn the tape on with him, and the guy can throw the ball from inside the pocket, even better than some of the athletic quarterbacks we've seen in past years. You know, he can pick a team apart, even though he's an outstanding athlete. I can't wait to see what he runs, you know, in a few days here at the Combine. But he's just a guy that is just the epitome of athletic, but he's not going to be reliant on it at the next level, meaning he's got all the intangibles as far as arm, you know, the strength, the velocity, placement, touch. So that's why he's really intriguing. Even though he's short, he has a knack for being able to throw behind the line of scrimmage, not be, you know, pressed to get outside the pocket. So I like him quite a bit. Actually, I have him as my number two quarterback, and I think certainly the success of Baker in his past season with the Browns, I think, is only going to help his draft stock.
To stay on quarterbacks, Daniel, guy that played a little ball here at East Carolina before transferring out to Washington State, Gardner Minshew, does he have much of a chance to get drafted? What's his draft stock looking like?
Yeah, you know, he's kind of an intriguing guy. I think he's one of those guys that fits in with, the mid-round guys that's not going to – you know, going to wow you, you know, as far as, you know, the physical aspects, the characteristics. But certainly, I mean, he's had success, you know, for multiple programs now, had a really good senior season for Washington State this year. Really good touch, really good placement, good pocket presence. A guy that I think is going to kind of be a borderline NFL starter. He doesn't have a great arm. But I think he's probably going to be a career backup, a really solid number two guy for a team, really smart, intelligent guy that's going to be good to have in the quarterback room. But, you know, I would imagine he's probably going to go somewhere in the fourth or fifth round. So kind of a borderline backup starter slash could start a few games if he needed to, if, you know, he's playing behind a quarterback that gets injured.
I want to ask you, Daniel, one, my favorite team is the Washington Redskins. We desperately need probably a whole quarterback room, like several quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But as far as locally, one of the guys we've seen down the road in Durham at Duke is with David Cutcliffe, is Daniel Jones. I heard his stock is, in fact, I just talked to a guy that said his stock is going up. Have you heard any, is he going to be definitely in the first round? Or I know that he's going to be one of the first quarterbacks taken in the draft. Where do you see him landing? Is it going to be in the first round, second round? What do you think with him?
I think so. I'd be shocked if he got out of the first round. I really like Daniel Jones. He's kind of one of those guys that, you know, has got it mentally. Obviously, David Cutcliffe, you know, he's a smart guy, same guy that coached Eli Payton. The mental side of the game, he's outstanding. Reads the game really well. He's tough as nails. I mean, he played, he broke his clavicle this past season. Within 9 days, he was back at practice again. Only missed two games in college. Just really, really tough. He kind of reminds me the way he throws the ball, just his mindset, the way he plays, a little bit of Phillip Rivers. That's who I kept thinking about every time I watched him play.
Yeah.
As far as just his overall style, I'm not saying he's going to be Phillip Rivers at the next level, but he just reminds me of his toughness. I mean, that's really his best quality, his intelligence and his toughness. You know, it's 6'5". I mean, that certainly is attractive as well. A few things that worry me about Daniel Jones, you know, as far as he's had some really questionable decision making. He's kind of had high interception numbers each season during his career. I mean, even during the Senior Bowl week, it was evident, you know, he made some bad decisions. He likes to throw the ball, you know, rather than take the sack, he likes to throw the ball and try to let his guys make a play on the ball. But
right.
Sometimes that seems to really affect him. And he doesn't have a great arm, so he might be limited to a West Coast offense. But he's a good player. He's a really, really good player that I don't think is going to bust. It's just a question of he doesn't have, in my opinion, he doesn't have a huge ceiling. He's limited as far as physical characteristics.
Daniel, a guy kind of shifting. I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, kind of shifting to the defensive side of the ball. As you look at this year's draft board, you have just a ton of, You see a majority of the picks, at least projected thus far, coming from the defensive front seven. And can you talk a little bit about that? You have guys like Nick Bosa, of course, Ed Oliver out of Houston, Cleveland Farrell out of Clemson. Talk a little bit about those guys that are on the board in the defensive front.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's something to get excited about. You got a lot of depth here, both at interior defensive line and then also as, you know, edge players. You know, it's going to be interesting. You know, some of these guys have, you know, some questionable off-the-field concerns. You know, not Bosa so much. I mean, there might be a little bit as far as the injury sitting out the last few games of the season. You know, questions as far as, you know, he's had some injury concerns. Sweat has had some off-the-field, you know, issues. There's been a few of these guys. But as far as talent, there's no short of talent here. You know, when it comes to the edge players I'll take first, I think Bosa is the best player in the draft. So I actually like him even better than his brother, Joey. I think he's a more complete player. I actually think he's a better pass rusher than his brother. He's a little bit quicker, better first step. And he has the power, the motor that his brother does too. He's just a really, really good player. And I think when his brother has stayed healthy for the Chargers this year, I think, you know, I should say the past 2 years, we've seen a tremendous amount of success. So I think Nick Bosa, this is coming out this year, can have even more success at the next level as long as he stays healthy and can stay on the field. But I love Farrell too from Clemson, a guy that's played in a lot of big games. You know, he decided to come back this past season, play again, and he showed even more upside as a player. I think he's great. Montez Sweat, Mississippi State, really good and awesome Senior Bowl week. Awesome size. I mean, like 6'6" and 250-something pounds, just lean muscle. Really good player. And I like a guy, Zach Allen, from Boston College, too, quite a bit. Not the same type of athletic rusher, but he's more of a left defensive end. He can hold up at the point of attack. Really strong guy. Good lateral agility. He's a really impressive guy that I'd imagine is going to go pretty high. And then you got Polite from the Gators, who had an awesome year, kind of came out of nowhere this past season, had 6 forced fumbles, 11 sacks, 19.5 tackles for loss this year for the Gators. Really, really good first step. So, I mean, there's not a shortage of edge players in this draft. And moving into the interior front, I think Jeff Simmons' injury for Mississippi State is going to, you know, possibly cause him to drop quite a bit, but he's a heck of a player. If he didn't have the off-the-field concerns, you know, when he was a freshman in college, you know, as far as the incident that we saw, of course, on TV the last couple weeks, but he's a really, really good football player. And you got guys like Dexter Lawrence, big, huge, bruising nose tackle for the Tigers, also for Clemson. And then, as you mentioned, Ed Oliver and also Williams from Alabama. I mean, those are 1 and 2. It's 1A and 1B for me. It's really, really close. I think Oliver is a little bit of a quicker first-step guy that's going to shoot the gap really quick, whereas Williams is a more of an all-around player that's going to be, you know, can play both as a one-technique defensive tackle, you know, hold a point of attack, two-gap player, or he can shoot the gaps like Ed Oliver, too, and play as a more disruptive interior pass rusher. So it's exciting, and those are just a few guys. I mean, as you mentioned, there's just so many of them in this draft class, and I think there's going to be a lot of really good starters coming out in the second and third rounds, too.
Daniel, right quick, before we move on, speaking of Ed Oliver, obviously there toward the end of the season, he had some games that he missed. He had the little sideline altercation with Major Applewhite, who's no longer at Houston now. Have you heard anything that makes you think that will be an impact on his stock?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, this time of year, it's really hard to stay. I mean, you got guys like Mel Kiper who have come out and said, oh, he's dropping quite a bit because of some of these off-the-field things. And then you have other guys, you know, that tell you, don't listen to that. Ed Oliver is still extremely highly rated by these teams. So it's really, really hard to say. I think that he's got no shortage of competitiveness. And I think the interview process at the combine is really going to either help or hurt some of these guys. And he's just one of them. I mean, some of these other defensive linemen are going to be, you know, that's such a huge, huge process that we kind of dismiss. You know, the medical and the combine interviews really are more important than the on-field workouts at the combine. And, you know, the problem is none of us are going to really know what goes on in those meetings because they keep them so, so quiet. And, you know, a lot of times it's just chemistry with these guys, with the coaches, you know, how they feel about a player after they talk to them, question them, see it, you know, kind of football intelligence he has, put some things on the big board. And we just won't know until draft night.
That was my point. all the speculation and everything. Sometimes the teams would probably, if they were honest, would tell you they really don't know up until the time that they're on the clock to make. You hear all these war room stories where they didn't make a decision until they were kind of on the fence until, oh, God, now it's our turn. We're on the clock, and we've got to pick our next guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What about I know Bubba had a question, and I'll ask it. I know that there's a lot of guys, Elderman comes to mind, but there are a lot of guys that are the surprise. Are there any guys out there that would be a great pick? I mean, Tom Brady was a 6th-round draft pick. So is there any guys that maybe have a lot of upswing, if you will, for their stock that maybe people are, I guess, they're kind of like diamonds in the rough?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things, too. I think, you know, you talk to 20 different guys, you get a lot of different answers. I'll tell you a few guys that I really, really like. The running back position, the guy Justice Hill from Oklahoma State, probably one of the most explosive backs in this class. I really have not heard a lot about him, but he was one of my favorite running backs in this class, top 6 or 7 back in the class for me. I'd imagine he's going to go probably somewhere early day 3, you know, fourth rounder maybe. I think he should go in the 3rd round. He's just an awesome change of pace back that really holds value both as a runner and a receiver, a guy I really, really like. And then going back to the quarterback position, there's a few guys I really like. I like a guy, Jordan Te'amu from Ole Miss. I don't know if you guys know him. But he you know, took over for Dak. He really had a great, great year this past year, 4,000 yards. You know, he played with probably the best receiving tandem in college football over there at Ole Miss, you know, with three first, second round wide receivers these next couple years. But he's just a really, really impressive guy. Great arm. He's just turning 21, or he just turned 21, really young, impressive athlete. You know, he's strong, smart kid. I think he's going to be a starter in the NFL. I think he's going to impress. So I'm curious to see where he goes. I like a guy named Brett Rippin from, Boise State. You probably remember his father, who played in the NFL for a while, yeah. Mark, I believe.
He's
also an interesting guy, 4-year starter who took over, you know, a few years after Kellen Moore, and he's beaten a lot of Kellen Moore's records over there with the Broncos. Not a guy that's going to wow you, similarly to Kellen Moore with his arm, but he's just really, really accurate, great production, really smart, accurate guy. I think he's also a borderline starter at the next level. Both these guys, I'd imagine, are going to go somewhere early on day 3, or at least they deserve to be. So I'm excited about these guys. There's a bunch more. It would probably take me all day to tell you all the gems I got.
I have a couple of guys. A couple of guys that I wanted to ask about. You know, Dave mentioned Julian Edelman, and just obviously he was a quarterback at Kent State and just has gone on to a tremendous career with the Patriots as a receiver and then also a return man. Just keeping up with the Senior Bowl, a couple of guys even smaller than Edelman, a guy from UMass named Andy Isabella, and then also Georgia State's Penny Hart. Have you heard anything about those guys after the strong senior weeks they had?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I've heard their names a lot. I think Isabella, I think he's a really, really good player. But, he, you know, I think the hype for him has gotten maybe a little bit too high. You know, I've heard second round. I don't think he's a second round player. You know, I have him graded as like a late third, early fourth round player. There's no question that he's an unbelievable track athlete. You know, it's interesting because he plays more as like a slot shifty receiver. But the problem is he's not, you know, he's unlike most 5'9 receivers, he's faster than he is quick, which is interesting because I think he's going to probably run in the 4.3 range. He's a track athlete. He's got great straight line speed. But for that height, you usually would expect a guy to have really great separation quickness, a guy that can really turn, you know, play laterally. And that's not really his game. He plays more as a vertical threat. And I'm kind of interested to see where he goes. I don't see a guy that consistently separates, even at the UMass level against the competition that he plays. But he's a good player. I think, he's going to be interesting to see where he goes. Penny Hart I really like because I think you're going to get more value with Penny Hart. He's going to be a little bit later in the draft, probably somewhere early, day three, fourth, fifth round maybe even. And, a guy that people are finally starting to catch on to after the Senior Bowl, but a guy I've liked for a while. And he's the very opposite of Isabella. He is just a guy that, kind of reminds me of what's his name over there with the Chicago Bears, the runner that they got, that they use as a wide receiver quite a bit. I can't, my mind's going blank here. It's kind of like a jukebox, you know, a video game controller, the way he can make guys miss in space. And that's what Penny Hart is. I mean, you put him as a running back, you line him up as a slot receiver. He's kind of a jack of all trades guy that is going to be really, really difficult to get two hands on because his short area quickness is just unreal. And he's built tough too. He's like a compactly built guy. And I'm excited about him. I think he's going to be a really nice piece for a team.
I had two more quarterback questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Two that come to mind were locally in the North Carolina area in Raleigh with Finley, and then also we have his dad played at East Carolina. He started off Florida, ended up in West Virginia with Will Grier. What do you think about those two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I like Ryan Finley quite a bit, actually. I know I've taken some grief from that on Twitter, all the armchair scouts out there aren't huge fans of Finley because they feel like he's, a little bit slight, which he is. I mean, he's a little bit smaller. He's height-wise, he's good. He's got a, big, long frame, but he's skinny, a little bit lean. And I've heard, a lot of people are questioning that. Also, the fact that he probably played with the best wide receiver in the country as well as one of the best offensive lines in the country. So you'll hear that, too. But I think he's really, really good. I think he's going to be, a really interesting get for a team. He played really good against Clemson. I mean, not this past season. This past season, he had a really bad game against Clemson. But the year before, last season, he had a great game against Clemson. Really accurate quarterback that almost puts the ball in the right spot every time. Plays in a pro-style offense. I like him. I think he should go in the second round. I think he's a starter at the next level. He really had a lot of success in a lot of big time games. He can throw the ball on the move. He's a little bit older though. He's going to be 25 his rookie season. So he's a little bit of an older prospect that might hurt his stock a little bit. The fact he doesn't have a great arm, that might hurt his stock as well. And the other guy you mentioned to me was Grier. Oh yeah. The thing about Grier is he's had success every place he's been. And for me, that accounts for something. At Florida, they were, undefeated when he was the starter. And then he goes to West Virginia, and they come onto the scene, too, and they've had a great couple seasons with him. I think he's got a great release, good velocity, really kind of a fearless guy, like quick decision maker. I think, he's another guy that I think is also an NFL starter. I'm not as big on Grier as some other guys are. But I think he's got kind of a jack of all trades, not great in anything type of guy. He reminds me a little bit, the NFL comparison I see for him is a little bit of an Andy Dalton. And I don't mean that as a slight, but I mean that he's a little bit more athletic than Dalton. He can pick up yards with his feet and, create for himself a little more than Dalton can. A very, very smooth player. That's what he reminds me. He's very smooth both in and out of the pocket. But he's not great at any one thing, and that's my concern with Grier.
All right, guys, do you have any final questions? I could talk draft all day long. I love It's great.
I got a fun question for Dan to close it out. In the years you've been covering the draft, who's the one player that you thought was going to be a big time NFL guy ended up just being a total dud?
Huh. That's a good question. You put me on the spot here. Let me think about it.
No pressure, right?
No. There's probably so many of them. I mean, one guy that stands out to me, I mean, I don't want to say he's a dud yet just because he's only had one season, but I was a really big fan of Josh Rosen, and he obviously didn't have the greatest start last year for Arizona. He struggled quite a bit. I don't think it's too late for him. I mean, the fact that he's only started how many games, you know. So I think he still has a chance to success, to have a good NFL career. I'm trying to think of some other guys that I –
Well, you forgot about them because they weren't any good.
Well, you know what happens? When you first started asking the question, I thought you were going to say, name some guys that you've scouted that you knew from the very first time you watched them were going to be great, and they have been great. And I was like, all these names came right to mind, but now you're going the opposite way, and I'm like, oh, man, I got to think about this for a minute.
Well, Daniel, I'm known for being negative, so.
Yeah, negative Nelly.
I was a little disappointed with Jared Goff in that Super Bowl game. I really liked him coming out of Cal. And I think he was going to be – I thought, he was going to be – and he has had a really good season. I'm not taking it away from him. But I was disappointed after my college evaluation of him watching him begin that Super Bowl. I said, man, I thought you had more than that, watching you with the Pac-10.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that everybody matures at different times. There are players that, I guess, start off great and then they fade out. And there are guys that, I guess, take longer to develop, right, that – if you give them just a little bit of a chance. And sometimes I think now we live in an instant society as far as like instant gratification society where the guys have got to come in and play and produce. And when I was growing up, the guy had a clipboard for a few years behind the starter where he got a chance to get his feet wet and learn behind the legend. And now, oh, God, we're going to throw you right there out there in the fire. Oh, yeah. You're making all this big money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Dan, thank you, Daniel. Thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully you'll come back with us closer to draft time. We really enjoyed the visit, and definitely, how can folks keep up with you and find out more information about the draft and your work?
Yeah, I started the website, several months back, but I haven't been super busy on it. I've really just been focusing on my guide, which I ultimately post some thoughts on Twitter. If anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, that's probably the best way, the place that I'm most on, most active. DTP Draft Scout is my Twitter handle. Feel free to connect with me over there. I also have my draft guide, which I spent, four months working on and writing and evaluating multiple game tapes on over 310 guys. I have that on my Twitter page. It's also on Amazon. If you typed in Draft Guide 2019, it'll be there. So feel free to do that, and let's connect and talk. Any questions you have, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right, man. Well, appreciate it, and we'll talk to you back in probably April, right?
That sounds great. Sounds like a great plan, guys.
All right. Have a good one, man.
All right. Take care.
Take care. All right, bye.
We certainly appreciate Daniel coming on the show. He's definitely a wealth of knowledge as it pertains to the combine and the NFL draft, and we look forward to having him back on down the road. Now, taking a look at some of the content we have headed your way in the next few days. Tomorrow we'll have our Houston preview as the 26-1 Cougs under Kelvin Sampson will make their way to Menchie's Coliseum tomorrow night. The Cougs are ranked as high as 6th in this week's polls, and the last time these two clubs met, on January 23rd out in Houston, the Cougs took a 94-50 win on the strength of 16 three-pointers. That's right, folks, 16 trifectas for this Houston ball club in that previous matchup. We'll also have a Keith LeClair Classic special. Not only will we preview and the University of Utah, Wright State, and Western Carolina, the three clubs the Pirates will be facing this weekend, we'll also have a special show where we talk to a number of folks, including Lynn and Audrey LeClaire, as well as other individuals who had very close relationships with Coach LeClaire or kind of knew him secondhand, including Bethany Bratcher, who pinned coaching third. We'll also talk to Tommy Eason, who was on Coach LeClaire's staff, pitcher Davey Penny, head coach Cliff Godwin, and many more. So you're definitely not going to want to miss that show, folks. Pay attention for that on Thursday. I encourage everyone to get out to Minji's, support Joe Dooley's ball club, help make a difference as the Pirates look to knock off the sixth-ranked Houston Cougars, and then get out to Clark LeClair Stadium this weekend and support Cliff Godwin's ball club in the Keith LeClair Classic.
What a very good show there. Appreciate you, Bubba, very much for your hard work on behind the scenes and all the information. Want to thank Kyle from LaGrange helping out as well with this great special on the Combine for the NFL, and our great guest as well. We had Chad Greer and Daniel Parlagreco. Appreciate them very, very much. We got a lot of great content coming up, as Bubba was telling you. In the meantime, don't forget to like us on Facebook. You can actually follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ. On Instagram, you can follow us at The Sports Objective. We're everywhere. Don't forget, by the way, listen wherever you listen to your podcast. You can leave us a 5-star review as well. Hope you enjoyed our special on the NFL Combine. I'm Dave Richmond for The Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.